This is Ted O'Connell, and this is Chapter 9, the Emergency Medicine Chapter from USMLE Step 2 Secrets, 5th Edition. Question 1, what are the three causes of burns? How should all burns be managed initially? Burns may be thermal, chemical, or electrical. Initial management of all burns includes lots of intravenous fluids. Remember the Parkland formula. First choice fluid is lactated Ringer solution, and backup is normal saline. Remove all clothes and other smoldering items from the body. Give copious irrigation to chemical burns. And of course, remember the ABCs, airway, breathing, and circulation. You should have a low threshold for intubation. In the setting of burns related to a fire, give 100% oxygen until significant carboxyhemoglobin from carbon monoxide inhalation is ruled out. Question 2, what are the most important sequelae of electrical burns? Because most of the tissue destruction due to electrical burns is internal, sequelae include muscle necrosis, rhabdomyolysis, compartment syndrome, dislocations, think posterior shoulder dislocation, myoglobinuria, acidosis, and renal failure. Use large amounts of intravenous hydration to prevent renal shutdown. The immediate life-threatening risk with electricity exposure and burns, including lightning and a child who puts his or her finger in an electrical outlet, is cardiac arrhythmias. Get an electrocardiogram and watch for seizures. Question 3, how are chemical burns managed? Which is worse, acid or alkali burns? All chemical burns should be treated with copious irrigation from the nearest source, such as tap water, because the sooner you dilute the chemical, the less damage will be done. Alkali burns cause liquefactive necrosis and are worse than acidic burns, which can cause coagulative necrosis. Eschar formation prevents deeper substance penetration. Question 4, what is burned skin prone to develop? Burned skin is much more prone to infection, especially by Staph aureus or Pseudomonas. With pseudomonal infection, look for a fruity smell and or blue-green appearance. Prophylactic antibiotics are only given topically. Debridement is very important in preventing infection. Give a tetanus booster to all burn patients unless they have recently received one within the past 5 years. Question 5, how is burn severity classified? Describe the management of each class. Burn depth terminology no longer includes the use of first, second, and third degree burns. Burn severity is now classified as superficial, superficial partial thickness, deep partial thickness, and full thickness burns. Superficial burns are erythematous without blister formation, involve only the epidermis, and pain is localized. Superficial partial thickness burns are painful, warm, and moist with blister formation and involve the epidermis and superficial papillary dermis. Deep partial thickness burns reveal skin that is mottled, waxy, and white in appearance with ruptured blisters. Pain sensation is absent, but pressure sensation is intact. Full thickness burns involve both the epidermis and dermis, have a white to gray, leathery, charred, or translucent appearance, and do not blanch with pressure. There is no pinprick sensation. Question 6, define hypothermia. How is it managed? What are the complications? Hypothermia is defined as a body temperature less than 95 degrees Fahrenheit, usually accompanied by mental status changes and generalized neurologic deficits. If the patient is conscious, you can rewarm the patient slowly with blankets, radiant heat, or a bear hugger. If the patient is unconscious, consider gastric and bladder lavage with warm water, as well as warm intravenous fluids. Monitor the EKG for arrhythmias, which are common in hypothermic patients. The most common arrhythmia is sinus bradycardia. This can lead to atrial fibrillation, ventricular fibrillation, and asystole. You may also rarely see the classic J wave, a small positive deflection following the QRS complex. Also monitor electrolytes, renal function, and acid-base status. Consider checking thyroid function to rule out myxedema coma. Question 7, distinguish between frost nip and frost bite. How are they managed? Frost nip, a mild form of cold injury, occurs when there is partial skin freezing resulting in cold and painful skin. In frostbite, a more severe form of cold injury, the skin is cold and numb. Treat both with analgesia, warming of the affected areas using warm water, local wound care, tetanus vaccination, and generalized warming, such as with blankets. Question 8, true or false? You should not give up resuscitation efforts until the patient is fully warmed in the setting of hypothermic cardiac arrest. True. An old saying in medicine claims that the patient is not considered dead until warm and dead. Hypothermia can slow body function to a remarkable degree, and there are case reports of resuscitation hours after initial temps in the field once the body was warmed. Question 9, define hyperthermia. What causes it? How is it managed? Hyperthermia is defined as a body temperature greater than 104 degrees Fahrenheit. The three primary causes are infectious, medications, and heat stroke. If heat stroke is a cause, look for a history of prolonged heat exposure and a high temperature over 100 degrees Fahrenheit, 104 degrees Fahrenheit, without clues to other culprits. Treat with immediate cooling, such as with wet blankets, ice, and cold water, to a goal temperature of about 102 degrees Fahrenheit. Avoid overshooting and causing hypothermia. The immediate threats to life are convulsions, which are treated with diazepam, and cardiovascular collapse. Always rule out infection, endocrine abnormalities, and medications, especially those with anticholinergic activity such as antihistamines, antipsychotics, and antidepressants as the cause. Question 10, what are the two classic examples of hyperthermia due to medication? Malignant hyperthermia is an idiosyncratic, genetically related reaction to general anesthesia, usually caused by succinylcholine or halothane exposure leading to extreme muscular contraction. Treat with dantrolene. Neuroleptic malignant syndrome is thought to be related to malignant hyperthermia and is an idiosyncratic, genetically related reaction to an antipsychotic. The classic tetrad includes altered mental status, lead pipe rigidity, hyperthermia, and autonomic instability. Look for extremely high levels of creatine phosphokinase and mental status changes in a patient taking antipsychotics. The first step is to stop the medication. The second step is supportive treatment, especially with lots of intravenous fluids to prevent renal shutdown due to rhabdomyolysis. The third step, if necessary, is to treat with dantrolene. Drug fevers are idiosyncratic reactions to a medication that was typically started within the past week. They rarely cause fever above 104 degrees Fahrenheit. Question 11, how are patients managed after a near drowning episode? Some, not all, believe that fresh water is worse than salt water because fresh water, if aspirated, can cause hypervolemia, electrolyte disturbances, and hemolysis. Intubate patients after a near-drowning episode if they are unconscious and monitor arterial blood gases if they are conscious. Patients who drown in cold water often do better than those who drown in warm water because of decreased metabolic needs. Death is usually due to hypoxia and/or cardiac arrest. Remember to look for head or neck trauma. Consider causes of why the near-drowning occurred and think of intoxication, seizure, syncope, and suicide attempt. Question 12, what are toxidromes? Describe the toxidromes associated with cholinergic crisis, anticholinergic crisis, sympathomimetics, and opiates. Toxidromes are syndromes caused by dangerously high levels of toxic substances in the body. Cholinergic crisis, think organophosphates or insecticides, classically presents with sludge, excessive salivation, lacrimation, urination, diaphoresis, gastrointestinal upset, and emesis. Also look for pinpoint pupils and decreased heart rate. Anticholinergic crisis, think TCA overdose, presents with a patient who is blind as a bat, mydriasis, hot as a hare, temperature dysregulation, mad as a hatter, CNS disturbances, dry as a bone, decreased secretion of bodily fluids, full as a flask, urinary retention, and red as a beet, flushing. Also look for increased heart rate. Sympathomimetics, think cocaine toxicity, can cause hypertension, tachycardia, increased activity, anxiety, dilated pupils, diaphoresis, and possibly altered mental status. Opiates, think heroin overdose, cause coma, pinpoint pupils, and respiratory depression. Also look for bradycardia and hypotension. Question 13. Name the antidote for each of the poisonings or overdoses listed on the left side of the table. So, for acetaminophen, the antidote is acetylcysteine. For benzodiazepines, give flumazenil. For beta blockers, give glucagon. For carbon monoxide, give oxygen or hyperbaric oxygen if it's severe. For cholinesterase inhibitors, give atropine or pralidoxime. For copper or gold, give penicillamine. For digoxin, normalize potassium and other electrolytes, and you can also give digoxin antibodies. For iron, give deferoxamine. For lead, give edetate or succimer. For methanol or ethylene glycol, give fomepizole or sometimes ethanol. For muscarinic receptor blockers, give physostigmine. For opioids, give naloxone. For quinidine or tricyclic antidepressants, give sodium bicarbonate, which is cardioprotective. That's the end of this chapter.